Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of About Abroad, where it's my job to introduce you to people who have built amazing lives for themselves in various foreign corners of the globe. We're talking with expats and thought leaders about moving abroad, remote work, visas, and all the fun and practical knowledge that you need to know to follow in their footsteps. If you've ever dreamed of making a life for yourself overseas, maybe working remotely or embracing long-term travel, retiring or studying abroad, or even just taking a peek inside life beyond your borders, you've landed in the right place. This episode is brought to you by my friends over at My Expat Taxes. For my fellow Americans out there, we all know tax season is upon us, and for anyone who's ever had the pleasure of dealing with multiple tax agencies in multiple countries, you know this can be a challenging experience. That's why when it comes to dealing with anything tax-related abroad, I always recommend hiring a pro to help you navigate this unknown space. In my experience, this not only saves you time and spares you from the unnecessary headaches, it also has literally saved me thousands of dollars in taxes over the years. So I am super excited to introduce you to My Expat Taxes, a true pro in this space that focuses 100% on U.S. expat taxes. Whether you're filing for 2023, catching up on back taxes, predicting a future tax obligation for a future move abroad, or just looking for some guidance, My Expat Taxes has your back with speedy and affordable online filing options and real human accountants to assist you as needed. Join the more than 16,000 other Americans living abroad who have used their services by visiting myexpattaxes.com via the link in the show notes. My guest today is my new friend Julia, who joins me from Japan, but this conversation takes us around the world, almost literally from Latin America up to Iceland, over to Sweden, down to Italy, and across the world to Nepal and even Japan, where Julia currently is. So a lot of fun and world travels wrapped up into this. She is the co-founder of a pretty awesome organization called Remote Nine. It's a community of digital nomads and world travelers that are going on highly curated, adventurous co-working trips around the world. So think motorbike trips through Nepal or hiking trips through Iceland and a variety of other pretty cool things that I think the About Abroad community will enjoy listening to. Julia has great energy and a very intentional way of approaching world travel with like-minded people. So I really enjoyed catching up with her, and I think you all will as well. Please help me in welcoming Julia to About Abroad.
Your room looks so Italian, Chase.
I'm glad you would notice that, I think, above most other guests. Yes, I'm in a very Italian situation here for our conversation today, up in the north of Italy. I think you know the town, Trento. Have you ever been to Trento?
Trento, I have. One of my best friends lives there, the guy who put us in touch. So it's a lovely, quaint little town. I'm sure you love it up there.
Quick shout out to Bartholomew for connecting us. Bart, for short, our mutual friend that put us in touch. You know, funny thing though, when Bart and I first met, he told me about you. We were talking, you know, random, like we were at like I think it's like an English Speakers in Trentino was the name of the group that kind of brought us all together. And we immediately got talking. We immediately hit it off. He's a traveling digital nomad from Naples, living here in the north of Italy, where I'm spending a few months. And we got to talking, and he said, "Oh, you should meet my friend, Julia. She's got this amazing company called Remote Nine." I said, "I know Remote Nine. I follow them on Instagram, and I've wanted to have them on my podcast." And he's like, "I want to have her on your podcast too. Let's make this happen."
Oh my God. Oh, that's so nice to hear. Thank you so much. And he's been talking to me about you as well on the other hand. So yeah. I'm so happy to be here.
It's a small nomad world, isn't it? It is. Yes. It's funny because I actually started following you originally because of previous guest here on About Abroad, Kathy from Wanderer's Wealth,
as Wanderer's Wealth.
Yeah, who I'm literally in the middle of an email chain with as we speak. Like we had a call a week or two ago, just catching up. We're friends as well. She went on one of your trips to Iceland. So that's how I originally found out about you. And I thought, this is an amazing concept.
Thank you so much. Oh my God, Kathy, I'm going to text her after this just to say hello. Yeah, she came to Iceland with us in May last year. It was an amazing group, amazing adventure. Iceland is one of our favorite places to go to. And like, yeah, we just loved having her, and like the group was fantastic. Have you been to Iceland?
I have. Yeah, I went one time actually. So my full time, like this is my side hustle here with About Abroad. But my full time job, I work at a company called Doist, and we do an annual retreat every year where we bring the whole company, about 100 of us, to a destination. And the first year I joined Doist, we did our retreat in Iceland. So it was like 7 years ago. But it was fantastic. Just an outdoor person's paradise, right?
Indeed, we say it's a content creation buffet. Like everywhere you go is just stunning, and after every bend, after every mountain, you're just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Everything is just, it looks like a different planet almost. It's fantastic. And what a dope company to work for. Like they take you to Iceland for a team retreat. Wow.
Yeah. It's an awesome way to, we're a fully remote team. So we have like 100 people in 35 different countries. Those 35 countries span all time zones. So we can't get together like physically very often. So twice a year we come together. It's funny, we kind of take a similar approach to you in one way, because we do this all hands where we have 100 people in one place. And then about 6 months later, we do what we call mini retreats, where we have like your individual teams coming together. So that could be like a team of five. It could be a team of 10. I think our biggest is a team of 18. They're smaller groups, which we're both like in the, event retreat organizing space. Like, as you know, breaking down that bigger group into smaller groups really helps create some deeper bonds. So we tackle the human connection in person thing from two different angles with the all hands and the smaller groups. And it works well for us.
Yeah, we also found that we also started with a bit of a bigger group, but we found that if the group gets too large, then obviously the dynamic shifts and groups within the groups start creating. Therefore, the group is not really united. And then these little gangs start forming, while with a smaller group of like 10 people, between 9 and 12, let's say, we found that that's the optimal number. To have enough time to get to know everyone, not enough people to get bored, like not enough people to get overwhelmed, but not too little people to get bored, if that makes sense. So yeah, and you have time to build deeper connections with everyone, which is what we strive to do, what's really important to us, and I bet what's important for your company as well, in your team, obviously.
100%. Yeah, that's what it's all about. These things are big investments for companies and for individuals, like to take the time to go invest in some of these trips. So you want to get those connections out of it. And you mentioned like you landed on this, it sounds like you toggled between some different numbers, you experimented. Was there some sort of like science behind landing on 9 people? I mean, it's the company, we haven't even introduced the company yet, so we're going to naturally talk about this, but the company's called Remote 9. And I'm curious to hear a lot about the story, but like just starting right there, like how did you land on 9 people?
So 9 people is the exact amount of people that fit into an Icelandic hot tub.
Okay. All routes go back to Iceland. I love it.
Exactly. So that's this short version. The long version is, yes, Machado's, who's my co-founder, he's been running trips, different audiences for 12 years. He started with backpackers in Australia, and then he moved on to shorter retreats, 1 week retreats for digital nomads, and now on to adventure road trips. And when he was doing backpacker trips, he would run groups of maybe like 15, 20 people. And then that's what he noticed. They noticed that the dynamic was a little bit off and people couldn't really connect on a deeper level because there were too many people and too short, like too little time to connect with everyone. And so eventually the retreats that he did were like more like 12, 15 people. And then we landed on 9. 9, yes, the hot tub thing, but it's mostly because 9 people is the right number to fit in a hot tub, in the sense that the group is united and we all fit in the same van, which means, you know, we sing the same songs, we look at the same things outside, conversations spark in the same space, and we can all participate. We all fit around the same dining table. So again, there aren't multiple conversations going on. We're all participating into one conversation. And the hot tub. We all sit in the same hot tub and we all can share one conversation, and everyone can just share their perspective on that topic. And this really helps foster those connections as a group. So there is a lot of thought behind it, yes.
Intentionality makes all the difference in the world, you know, and I think like putting a cap on things is often seen as like a limitation, but I see it in many cases as like an enhancer. When you're talking about like the quality of the experience, I think a lot of people may at first glance see something and say, oh, well, you know, like the more people there are, the more opportunity I might have to connect with someone or to find the, you know, the right business partner in a networking event or, you know, whatever it may be. But I think like more and more as I get like a little bit older, I don't know if necessarily wiser, but the more I learn about like life and go through some of these experiences, I do really appreciate like smaller, more intimate groups where you can get a lot more quality than quantity.
For sure. I experience the same. I'm a bit of an introverted person. And when the group is too big, I really get overwhelmed. And therefore, I just like retreat in my own shell, because that overwhelm is just too much to handle. While in a smaller group, especially if I know that the people in the group come in with the same mindset that I have for sharing, for being open-hearted and vulnerable, then I can relax and I can just, you know, I know I'm in a safe space where I can be myself and where I can open up. And that also helps foster connection. That's why the intimate group as a business strategy is pretty crap, in the sense that it's a terrible business idea. Like, only 7 paid participants on a trip like that. It's obviously not a great business plan, but we don't really care about that. We care about creating the connections. That's why we're doing it. It's a big passion project for us. And so we are, going quality over quantity for sure.
What a cool opportunity too, though. If you love this stuff and if you already have the experience doing it, you're already a world traveler and kind of know the locations, or if you're not, you get to discover them. And then along the way, you get to like connect with awesome people that you kind of hand pick and curate to create the right dynamic for a group. Like, to me, I mean, I don't know, we're of the same mindset here. Like, that just sounds like pure fun to me. So if it makes some money, if you get to, you know, if you're doing what you're passionate about, and then also getting to like live your dream to travel the world with awesome people on epic adventures. I don't know. Sounds like a great business model.
Right? It's a hashtag dream job.
Hashtag dream job. Yes, exactly.
It does. We did it. Well, the reason why we started it, it's because we were a bit lonely, first of all, because I don't know if this happened to you or if it resonates. I'm sure it might resonate with some people from your audience, but like the digital nomad lifestyle and like traveling around consistently all the time can get pretty intense and pretty lonely and pretty draining. So doing it with people who are your best friends and exploring the world, having fun adventures with people you can truly connect with, or you already have connected with, then, you know, it can make the difference between an amazing lifestyle with like of happiness or a meh lifestyle of kind of struggling to get to the next location and lots of logistics. Oh my God. So, mamma mia.
Totally. I can absolutely relate to you on that. I want to actually, let's back up a little bit, because I actually don't know like the sort of like the beginning stages of Remote 9. And also like, I just know some bullet points on what you offer, but I probably know more than the audience. So let's kind of like, set the stage a little bit and like go back to the beginning and tell the story, and then like what your sort of service offering is now? Because I think that will set people up with a little bit more context for like, okay, what are we actually talking about here?
Sure, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So Remote 9 is an organization that runs co-working adventure road trips for digital nomads who want to connect on a deeper level and build meaningful, long-lasting relationships that go beyond borders, basically. So that's like the elevator pitch. To give a bit more context, we take, as we mentioned, nine remote workers on road trips or other kind of experiences like sailing trips. We're thinking about organizing motorbike trips. We're all sorts of trips that digital nomads don't normally have easy access to, that are maybe logistically tricky to organize. Motorbike trips, sailing trips, the kind of trips that are either logistically very difficult to organize for digital nomads, because a motorbike trip with good internet and like places and time and space for co-working and stuff, it's quite tricky to organize, and sailing as well. So these kind of adventure trips that are a little bit more on the unconventional side. And we use these experiences as a tool to create those deep, long-lasting connections, because we discovered that deep bonds are created when humans experience strong emotions together. So either laughter or cry, or like just look at the best landscape that you've ever seen, or like jump off a cliff hand in hand with your companions, or true story, like slide down the side of a volcano in Iceland on the snow. All of these kind of experiences that trigger these strong emotions, release all of the good shit in your brain, like all of the good hormones that make humans truly bond. So everything on the trip, on the experience, is designed to trigger these emotions and therefore build that connection. So yeah, that's basically what we do. Our product is human connection. And then, you know, disguised as a travel company, a retreat company for digital nomads.
Got to be the coolest product offering ever. I agree. It's such a great concept though, because like you're combining the small group mentality, so you can build those like deep connections over a period of time. What it's like normally like 20 days or something, correct?
Yes, it's a bit longer. There's thought behind this as well, because it's like after a week we notice that people become friends, and then after 2 weeks they become good friends. After 3 weeks, they become a family. And then after 4 weeks, they start hating each other. So we just stop at that sweet spot, basically.
Yeah, like brothers and sisters fighting. You don't want to get to that stage. You want to leave, end on a happy note.
Exactly. So 20 days, chef's kiss, perfect spot.
Chef's kiss. Yeah, that I do think it's a really good number. I mean, for me, like I also think it allows you, I see a lot of people that want to travel somewhere for like a month. Like, so, you know, for example, you have a trip coming up in Japan that I happen to know about. And like, so if it were me going on that trip, I would think like, cool, I can do this for 20 days and I can bookend 3 or 4 days, 5 days on either end, do my month in Japan and kind of get a little bit of my me time, do exactly what I want to do, but then also get this like epic adventure of traveling around Japan with like a curated group of people. I know my co-working situation's going to be solid. I know that there's going to be adventure and human connection and personal development and all these things like all wrapped up into one. It sounds like a perfect month.
Like the perfect recipe for everything. And a lot of participants actually do this. They come on the trip first so that they can get, as you said, like an overview of the country. They can get acquainted with the space, and they know that they're going to have solid internet, all the logistics are taken care of, all of that good stuff. And then they tend to extend after the trip, which is a smart thing to do because you already have people that you can keep traveling with because you already formed those connections. So if you're staying after the trip, you already know the country, you kind of like can a little bit navigate it. So it's a really great way to get an introduction to a country and then stay a bit longer after that. A lot of people do this, including myself, by the way. So I'll be in Japan for 3 months. So.
Oh, wow. You're already there for 3 months? Are you there now, actually? I don't know where you are.
I am. Yeah. And funny, oh my God, I'm taking this call from a manga cafe. I don't know if you know what that is.
But I have no idea. Like, what is that?
It's basically a library of just manga comic books. And you have these private rooms where you can book by the hour and you can just read the manga. It's basically like a manga hostel. So yeah. It's
like, yeah, I feel like Japan has a lot of these kind of things, like where you can book like little pods to sleep in, and like that you can book lots of little spaces in Japan.
Yes, there. I think, I don't know, as a culture, they strike me as a bit of a, they fear other people. So anything that can avoid human interaction, it's like, in a way, I think they crave a bit of what we have a lot of in Italy, which is like the, the kind of like communality where you actually just talk to people in the queue or the post office or something like that.
After spending a few months in Italy now, I'm wondering how you jive with that, because it's so, I mean, I lived in Spain for almost 5 years and come from like the southeast of the US where we're very kind of like huggy, touchy feely. Spain is definitely like that. Italy's very like that. You eat in big groups, you share food, you do the cheek kisses and the hand and the touch. Like when a lot of people, like when, sometimes I catch myself doing this when I go back to the US, I've gotten to be very like when I talk to someone, I like put my hand on their shoulder. I have a friend back in Spain who, like, when he's talking to you, he like is always touching you. It's like a, sometimes even like linking his arm with you, you know, it's very, very familiar in that way. And I catch myself doing it sometimes and see people's eyes kind of like, what are you doing? So now I'm imagining you there in Japan where they're like, you know, go in your own little pod and don't come near me. And you're like, Mamma Mia, come on, let me.
Please. Just want to have a conversation in my broken Japanese. Oh, lol. No, it is a bit of a culture shock, but honestly, I lived in the UK for 10 years, so I'm kind of used to suppressing that a little bit, that side of me. And now I'm kind of like, I understand when it's okay to be doing that and when people are not so receiving of that, like they don't like receiving that stuff. So I kind of navigate that a little bit better now. When I was in Italy, I would not have boundaries.
You know, open the floodgates, like, just like the touchy-feely comes out. That's such a fun part of spending a lot of time abroad, though, right? Because you do become very self-aware of little things like that. Like I never thought about this, that exactly what we're talking about now, before like moving abroad for the first time. And I don't know, there's some like just kind of like baked in growth that comes along with this lifestyle that you don't actually plan for. I don't think it's like part of the journey that you're expecting, but upon reflection, you realize like, wow, I've come to know something about myself that I didn't realize before, or like, I'm just aware of how different cultures interact with each other. And I don't know, there's something fun baked into that awareness.
For sure. And I don't know if this happened to you, but for example, I take a lot of things way less personally now, because I just think it's cultural thing. Like, that's my first thought. It's like, oh, they're doing this because it's what they do. It's like, it's just who they are because of where they're from and their experiences, rather than, oh, they're doing that because whatever other reason. So I feel that I'm a lot more flexible mentally about everything. And you're absolutely right. You start learning a lot of things that no one talks about. No one knows that they're like the byproduct of traveling and living abroad and moving and overcoming all of these challenges that come.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like a directly connected to that, like a skill or like a muscle that I feel like I've strengthened is like the ability to see two sides of any given conversation or any given conflict, whatever. Whereas like before I might've been like much more like myopic on just like one side, like I see it this way. And I think having lived amongst people who approach problem solving or, you know, social issues or, the way that they, you know, educate themselves or whatever it may be, like being around people who do things differently than the way I was raised to do them or see them, has definitely strengthened that muscle. So I'm like, I can look at a topic, look at an issue and kind of like not take it personally if someone sees it differently than me and see their side of it. And I feel like that's, you know, helped me in so many situations now since having like, you know, really honed that skill a little bit more.
Yeah. And if you approach life with this mindset, you grow even more and more and more, because if you approach life with this mindset that everyone has something to share and you shouldn't take things personally, and there is always two sides of the same coin, you start also learning what everyone else has to teach. Because by keeping an open mind, you are able to absorb other points of view, and that will kind of like give you mental plasticity in a way as well. And you learn so many things that are like, you think they're random, like there's so many random things, but you never know when you're gonna need that skill or when you are going to think, oh, I know this, I've seen it done once in Nepal by this woman or whatever. And then you're like, oh, now I can do it too. So it's so enriching to, yeah, meet and learn from people from different walks of life. I really appreciate that about traveling.
Yeah, well, we totally agree. There's some like quote out there that it's like on, you know, bumper stickers and stuff, but it, I can't remember it exactly, but it's like, those who don't travel, like only read one chapter of the book or something like that. It's like, you know, some famous quote that I obviously can't regurgitate now for some reason, but I do think there's some truth to that. It's like, you know, if you don't get a chance to read the other chapters, you know, being like other countries and cultures around the world, then you are sort of like you're selling yourself short and missing out on a big part of life. Of course, it's not for everyone. It's, you know, I know I have really close friends who I have a ton in common with who have like zero interest in ever leaving home. You know, like they're, or like maybe going on just a vacation every now and then, but there's no like deep interest in that. And that's fine too. But for those of us that have that itch, I think like you always owe it to yourself to try to scratch it and just like go out there and experience as much of it as you can, because not only is it fun and adventurous and you get to make cool connections and stuff, but you do actually like learn and grow a lot. And it's probably a part of this lifestyle that you don't hear people talk about as much. Like we're more about like the adventure and the Instagram pictures than we are about the deep personal growth that comes along with it. But I totally think it's an undersold aspect.
For sure. They go hand in hand. And if I can add something to that, I see it even more philosophically in a way, in the sense that I see it as the next step in the human evolution in a way, because it's like the more people grow, the more they can teach other people how to grow. The more people experience and learn, the more they can teach others. And this kind of creates a ripple effect. If I teach you this thing and then you teach it to the other person and taradaradara, then everyone is going to be more aware about things and everyone will grow personally, and therefore we all grow as a species. Yeah. It sounds very philosophical and very like,
but I appreciate it. I appreciate you bringing some intelligence to this show. I'm normally on here just jabbering on about traveling and leaving digital nomad visas and stuff. So you took about abroad to another level.
We'll be right back to the show after a quick break for a note from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you in partnership with my friends over at Lamont & Co. If you're planning a retreat, offsite, or group gathering of any kind this year, I highly suggest tapping into their extensive knowledge and experience to help you find the best possible venue for your event. I work with Kim, who has become my trusted advisor when it comes to planning any event around the world, and she's literally saved me hundreds of hours of work and has located venues I never would have found on my own. She even provides me with budget breakdowns and cost estimates for each
each location I'm interested in and negotiates contract terms on my behalf, all for free. If it sounds too good to be true, I thought the exact same thing at first, but I can assure you this is the real deal. Lamont is paid by the venues, not by you. So there's no cost, risk, or obligation here. So do yourself a favor and contact Lamont via the link in the show notes when you're planning your next group retreat, offsite, or gathering. Before we dive back into the rest of the interview, I have a small favor to ask of the audience. If you are enjoying this episode and getting some value out of it, then please follow these very simple instructions. Step one, pick up your phone. I'll give you a second. Step two, leave a 5-star review for About Abroad. That's it. That's all I'm asking. It takes about 2 seconds. Of course, it is completely free to you, and it is the best possible way to support myself, the show, and everyone working on About Abroad behind the scenes. The funny thing is that there are thousands of people tuning in to this show every single week, but we are very likely to only get a few reviews by industry standards, and reviews are the most impactful way that you can show support for the show. So if you have the time, please do so. And either way, I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. Okay, now back to the episode. I was going to tell you, right as we were getting started on this, I pulled up your website and I was looking at the description of your upcoming trip to Japan. I'm just going to read this really quick because it sounds so incredibly awesome. So we're all about that slow-paced, laid-back vibe that lets you have the best of both worlds. Co-working and adventure. Picture this, retracing the steps of Japanese samurai and geisha, discovering ancient temples and futuristic wonders, bathing in natural hot springs surrounded by bamboo groves, slurping on juicy ramen and tasting the freshest sushi. And when we're not out there having a blast, we can kick back, relax, and watch some anime or sing our hearts out and drink sake in a traditional karaoke bar. Sign me up. Sounds epic. I had that on the other screen here and I'm like, oh my God, listen to this. Like this sounds super, super fun. So that's the trip that's coming up in Japan, or you're already in Japan, but you're hosting like a couple there over the next few months. Is that right?
Yeah, we're hosting one in March and one in April. I'm already here scouting the places, making sure, you know, the logistics are solid and all of that stuff. Wi-Fi.
Hashtag dream job again, you know?
Hashtag dream job. I'm just waiting for the amazing people to come here. We've been interviewing them over the last month or so. So because we highly curate the group, we have calls with everyone. And oh my God, such amazing humans are about to just like turn up in Japan and trust us with their hearts basically, and they're just like, yeah, take me to Japan, and they're so amazing. I cannot wait to meet them in person. We've had stunning interviews. Just my heart is so full of like gratitude.
That's so cool.
For these people and this lifestyle and this everything.
I love that. Like how do you curate the group? Like are you obviously that means you're accepting some people, declining others, but like what are you looking for in a given group? And does that change location to location? Like, is there a theme or something? Or is it generally like the same type of demographic that you're looking for? And what does that demographic look like? Like, what, you know, I think that could be interesting for people to know.
Sure. So one thing that the person who's a right fit for the community is... we call them hell yes people. So people who have that positive attitude to life, but not toxic positivity. It's just like a positive outlook. People who are ambitious and people who are open-hearted and they're willing to get vulnerable. They're willing to just really strive to connect and grow. So we are looking for these kind of unicorn humans who... want to contribute to also something greater than themselves, because our long-term goal is creating the community. So we don't want someone who just, oh yeah, this sounds like a dope trip, I will join and then I will never see them again. We want someone who was also looking for those deeper connections, because we want to have a long-term community after the trips. So that's pretty much our main quality that we look for in people. And we all, I mean, people who apply to our trip and who resonate with what we're doing, they're all pretty dope, and they're all on that personal development journey. So I've been lucky to interview so many amazing, amazing people that I learned so much from. And it's really hard to make a selection because obviously we only have 7 spots. Sometimes participants come back. So maybe sometimes we have 5 spots for new people. And my heart breaks every time I have to say no to some amazing human just because there's someone else that's even more amazing. So, yeah.
When you're vying for people, just a few spots, you know, yeah, I mean, it's understandable, a little bit of competition, but I imagine that is tough. Yeah. Yeah. And do you see that often people, so some criteria that people might be, you might have is, I'm assuming, you know, they're able to work remotely, which means generally they're working. I think that's a important element or distinction because, you know, if you're not working, then, and everyone else is, it creates a little bit of a different dynamic. So I think that's an important point to point out. Like if you have remote work, you can go on this trip, like it's more of a fit for you. But do you have people that are in like the job seeking phase or kind of just trying to figure stuff out and maybe going to use that time for reflection and networking to a degree?
For sure, actually. As long as they are in the job seeking phase, but they embrace the digital nomad lifestyle, so like the location independent lifestyle, as long as they live that location independent lifestyle, a lot of people come on the trips, especially because they're in that phase of their lives when they're trying to figure out what to do next. Maybe they just quit their jobs and they want to start their own businesses. We have so many participants who are like that. And the reason is because it's such an inspiring environment. You're surrounded by, again, all of these amazing people who are ambitious and they're like experts at what they do. They have walked so many paths in life. They know so much about a lot. And so being surrounded by all of these people who are willing to share their expertise, their inspiration, their energy is incredibly, motivating and inspiring for someone who's trying to figure out the next step in life, as well as obviously offering kind of like a greenhouse for networking. Because if you build a solid friendship with someone, then the trust that you need in order to maybe start a business with them or in order to, I don't know, outsource or work together with them somehow on a professional level, the trust is there. And so the business opportunities just come because of the relationship that has been created. And therefore, a lot of people come in search of, I have this business idea. Who wants to join me? Who wants to partner up with me? Or, hey, I need someone who's amazing at Instagram ads because I can't get my business off the ground. Do you know someone? And therefore, not only do you build friendships that last for a lifetime, you also build very precious professional connections. As a matter of fact, that's how Machado and I met in the first place. I went to one of his retreats. We became really good friends. And then he was like, hey, by the way, I have this idea of starting Remote 9. We take remote workers on adventure road trips. We have a blast. Do you want to join me? Do you want to do it with me? It took me about 2 seconds to think about it. And I was like, hell yeah, Machado.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, I love the hell yeah decision framework. It's like, if it's not a hell yeah, it's a no. And you know, exactly. And when it feels like a hell yeah, you have to take it. Yes. It seems like it aligns perfectly with your background, Andreas' background. And you've built something really cool. Another element that I think is worth pointing out, that at least jumps out at me, comparatively to, like, you know, let's say, for example, I wanted to go to Japan on my own and go to a co-living and live there and, you know, do some masterminds and digital nomad meetups and things. Like, I could do that, right? Like, I could go do my own excursions or even meet up with groups who are doing those excursions together. So I could kind of like curate that myself, and I could have the community in a way. But adding in the adventure element, where, as you mentioned, like, it's not just about the adventure for the fun. It's also about, like, you build deep connections through those adventures and excursions and experiencing those highs and lows together as a group. Like, but that adventure element is really cool. Like, when I look at the itineraries for the places, like, we're talking a lot about Japan, but as you said, you've done these in Iceland. I see you've got a sailing trip in Croatia coming up. You know, like, you're doing things that are outside of the ordinary. You're getting off the beaten path, getting away from some of the tourist traps. And I think that is something that's really powerful and also very exciting and, like, new and novel. And for experienced digital nomads and people that have been doing this, some sort of this lifestyle for a long time, they're looking for that, right? Like, they want something like, I don't want to go, you know, I'm in Trentino in Northern Italy right now, not in Milan, for example. Like, at this stage of my journey, I want like a different, more like adventurous excursion. And so, I don't know, I think you've hit on something really interesting there as well. Do you find that that's something that people in your group are really looking for?
As well, yes, because after you've been a digital nomad for a while, you've done Bali, you've done Lisbon, you've done Madeira, you've done it all. It's like you're looking for, and it's not about the place anymore. I met someone recently in the Philippines, and something they said that really struck a chord. They were like, after 3 years of being a digital nomad, this is just another beach. That is just another mountain. The touristy spots, the spots where every digital nomad goes, they kind of become old after you've done it for 3, 4 years, 5 years. You've seen it. So you are looking for experiences that are more meaningful, deeper. You're not looking for anything superficial anymore. At least that's what most of our participants want, is to go, you know, below the surface, dig deeper, finding like experiences that are more unconventional, like a motorcycle trip through Nepal camping. It's not something digital nomads do. It's not an easy thing to do. And like, wouldn't it be cool to be able to say, I've done that in my digital nomad journey? So people look for something that would make them say, my life is dope. Not because I'm sipping mimosa in a villa in Bali. Everyone can do that. It's so easy to do. Like, just book a flight, go to Bali, and it's the easiest thing. It's like, you might as well have stayed in your comfy London flat or wherever, while you go hike the Annapurna circuit while working remotely. You go, like on a tuk-tuk trip of the Himalayas, you go in the rainforest on a kayak trip, you know, all of these things that make you really say, fuck, life is awesome.
Yeah. And to keep in mind, like if I wanted to go on a motorbike trip in Nepal, maybe I could figure that out. Like, I'm a fairly experienced traveler and I'm not sure I could actually figure that out on my own without some help. So I would look for some help with that regardless. Setting that aside, I also need to keep working, right? So I need to know that I'm going to have solid connection, that I'm going to have a comfortable place to lay my head at night, that I'm going to have a place to take calls from. And like, you know, packaging all that together is really hard, even for the most experienced traveler and nomad out there. So I think like that's super cool as well. Could you illustrate a little bit? Like, I looked at some of the itineraries, but you know better than me, obviously. Like, what in Japan for this trip you have coming up, for example, like, what does the kind of the high level bullet points look like for the excursion or for the itinerary, just to kind of like paint a picture?
Ooh la la. Okay. So we're going to cover obviously some of the unmissable highlights in Japan. So we're going to Kyoto, for example, which is obviously beloved by many, many travelers. But we're also going to like little countryside towns where no one speaks English. I am learning Japanese myself because we have to kind of overcome this. But we are going to go to, in the middle of the mountains, to hot spring towns that have inspired Miyazaki. I don't know if the audience might know. And I'm not going to say names because it's like hard to pronounce and probably no one will know what I'm talking about anyway. But we're going to go to like a little tiny town in the northern part of Japan in the Alps, and which is famous for sake breweries. So it's an area where they brew sake. We're going to go hopping between all the sake breweries and do the sake tasting. We're going to go to do tea ceremonies. We're going to go explore how like an old samurai house and see how they used to live. We're going to meet geishas, hopefully in Kyoto. We'll see. They're very elusive. we're organizing like origami. So we're going to really explore the cultural part of a country like Japan, because there's so much to see. And then we're going to do some hikes, but the Japan trip is mostly going to be about the cultural discovery, I would say. Iceland is all about adventure. So we go on hikes, we climb volcanoes, we go snorkeling in the tectonic plates, we take ice baths under frozen waterfalls. So it really depends on the kind of country that we go see. Some countries are more suited to adventure. Some countries are, like Japan, more suited to more cultural experiences.
Epic. Oh my God. It sounds so fun. I wonder, do you see a lot of, like, I'm thinking about that trip for myself right now. And I think like, it's something that I would love to go on either of those trips, but I wonder about doing it as, so I wonder about doing it as a couple though. Like, do you see a lot of, is it mostly singles or do you see couples or even like families to some degree joining? Like, what's the age and relationship status demographic?
Demographic. So we have people joining between, let's say, late 20s to actually we had people in their 50s as well. We truly love have a wider spectrum of ages as well, because again, the older people can mentor younger people can bring energy to the oldies. And so it's just like, again, it fosters an intergenerational kind of community as well, which is, again, the long-term plan, so that people of different ages can really share with each other. But generally speaking, let's say average is mid-30s, early to mid-30s. In terms of couples, we do have couples on trips, and that's super awesome to see how, it's really inspiring to see how a couple can live that lifestyle together. Because a lot of us are single, but we actually crave a partnership of some kind. And a lot of us are a bit discouraged by the fact that dating in the digital nomad world is a little bit tricky. And so having couples who embody the, you can do it, this is possible, you can have a life partner and travel the world with them, it's truly, truly inspiring for all of us single people.
I think I just realized why I asked that question. So I had some like subconscious thoughts going on there, and there were two subconscious reasons. One was, and there's a question baked into this comment. One was because the schedule sounds awesome, and I could foresee me, for example, wanting to do like almost everything on the itinerary, but perhaps like in some cases, my wife would popped out like, oh no, that's not for me. You know, this part's not for me. So the question attached to that is like, I assume that there's some, you know, optionality involved. You can, you know, if you don't want to go on some part of the trip or something, you can, you know, stay back for that excursion or whatever. And then I guess the second part is because there's only 7 spots. There's 9 people total. You and your partner in the business occupy 2 of those spots. So only 7 spots left. And if you have a couple or two, like you've already eaten up a large percentage of the group, and there's already like a connection there. So I was wondering, I guess, subconsciously, like if you optimized for individuals to avoid that situation, but it sounds like you don't. So that's part's already answered. Maybe you can address the first part.
Ish. It's a bit of both, in the sense that we normally don't have more than 1 couple per trip to avoid the couple, you know, isolating themselves. Another thing that we do is when we interview couples, we interview each individual individually, like each person individually, to make sure that they both align and they're both a good fit individually for the community and the trip. And then we also interview them as a couple to make sure that nothing against them, but they're not one of those couples who would just be on their own and like lock themselves in the room and like not engage with the rest of the group. So we, when we do take couples on board, we also really do make sure that they would be a good fit for the rest of the group. So a bit of mix, but we love having couples. Like yeah. The couples that we had so far were absolutely dope.
it's the extra layer of intentionality that we've talked about many yeah. times today. Like, you know, actively thinking through those things makes the huge difference between like a very cool experience and like a completely life-changing or, you know, memorable experience that you'll talk about for decades to come. So I think that's awesome that you guys have thought through all the details like that. And I know from the people that have been on the trips that they're, you know, everyone walks away impressed. So I think you curate like every detail to the nth degree, which is awesome.
Thank you. And to add one more thing to the couple thing, I feel that a lot of the couples that we've had, they crave other connections outside of the couple. So it's really an enriching thing for the couple as well, because they get to build relationships with other people. So we've had actually funny thing. I just received a WhatsApp photo from one of the couples that we had on board. They came with us to Iceland and then back with us to Indonesia as well. So we know them very well by now. We hang out a lot. They're from the Netherlands. They're amazing videographers. And they just went to the US and they met up with two other participants from the Iceland trip. So they're now all together, like just chilling, enjoying the US. And they're just very grateful that they get to have friends outside of the couple. So it's like a win-win situation for everyone.
Amazing. I love it. Yeah. Those like the deep relationships that last beyond just the 20 days together yes. are the icing on the cake, I think, because, you know, if you can meet some others and like resonate with where they're coming from, make some connections, you know, keep those going into the future. That's been such a fun part of doing this for a long time. Is like, I was talking with another guest that we just had on the show a couple weeks ago, Nathan, and he was saying the same thing. Like this year he's traveling basically just to like meet up with people that he's connected with over time. And he's going to weddings. He's meeting up for people's birthdays. And like, we're talking in like, you know, various corners of the world. And so that's like a part of this whole lifestyle, I think, that's probably also under appreciated early on, but something you really start to appreciate over time is like you end up building these deep connections with people all around the world, and you get to meet up. It may not be every year, it may not, you know, maybe every several years, sometimes more frequently, but like that's been extremely rewarding for me and just, you know, a lot of fun.
Yeah, we found that sometimes it's really hard to keep those connections alive. So one of the things that happened to me at the beginning is, yes, you meet a lot of amazing people. Yes, you spend maybe like 2 months together in the same place and you really connect and you build that friendship. Personally, often, unluckily, it just fades away after a while, because maybe like you go somewhere, they go somewhere else. So yes, you do still keep in touch over Instagram and stuff, but not really to a point where the relationship can grow really deep. So something that we do personally is we host gatherings, like non-informal gatherings, let's say, non-profit. We do community nurturing events. So like one of the members from our community, who's one of my best friends, she has an amazing countryside house in the forest of Estonia, and she lets us use it to gather the community. So when we're not running trips, we take it upon ourselves to be the organizers of just random gatherings, because if no one does it, then some people might not really, you know, meet again. They might not take that initiative to go visit each other around the world, while we also do love doing it. And so we create these community nurturing events, and we just like, hey, people, we organize everything. You just turn up. It's nonprofit, so we just share the expenses, whatever expenses there are. So we make it accessible for everyone. And yeah, it's just an excuse to meet up again, keep nurturing that relationship. And we do it all around the world as well. So it's like, it's an itinerant community. If someone wants to keep joining the events, and a lot of people do, not only do you get to explore different parts of the world, but you also get to travel with your best friends. So it's hard for someone to be able to kind of like do this on their own. There's only so many, you know, days in a year, even if you work remotely. If I was in Mexico last year, I'm not going to go back to Mexico this year, probably. There's so much more world to see. So yeah, we also offer excuses for people to meet again.
Yeah, if you build it, they will come. Like you just have exactly. to create the space for people to come, and then they'll continue. But like, yeah, it's very easy just to get wrapped up in your own life and kind of, you know, just like go off on your own, do your own thing. And you know, if you don't have that like crafted space to come back to, or that reason to make that trip there. So, that's an added bonus that you guys are doing. What's on the agenda for like the rest of the year? Like people with it, this is going to be released in mid-March. So, you're getting ready to host one trip in Japan. I think you've got another one. I see Croatia on the horizon. Yeah. What else is coming up over the course of the next year that people should know about?
So yes, if you're listening to this, we're probably singing karaoke and drinking sake somewhere in Japan. But what's up next is in the summer. Summertime is the time when we do not run trips, but we host these nonprofit events for community building and community nurturing. So we will probably be in Sweden hosting a remote nine gathering just exclusively for members of the community. And it's a co-living type situation. We're going to be there for maybe a month, and people are free to come, free to stay. And it's an excuse for them to come meet the people who they went on trip with, meet the other members of the Remote Nine community, and again, just strengthening those relationships. And then we're probably going to go to Italy, because I'm from there. We have a hub in Italy. We have a space where we can go and again, do some co-living and just chill community events where we get to hang out. And this is how we spend our summers, basically, just organizing co-livings and fun things. And then in the fall is when we run the second batch of trips. We have Croatia planned sailing 20 days. Oh, I'm so looking forward to that. It's gonna be amazing.
Is it 20 days on a boat, or do you where do you work for that?
It's 2 weeks on a boat, 14 days, and 3 days in a villa before we jump on the boat. So it's 3 days to get to know each other in a villa. And then we get on the boat for 2 weeks. We work from the boat.
Nice. So
that's
okay.
The cool part. That's a cool thing. We work from
I thought
the
it was
boat.
Cool. It's I work from my camper van sometimes. I have Starlink in the camper van. And so I'm able to work from that. And that kind of blew my mind when that started working. But you're doing it from a boat in the Adriatic. That's a different level, Julia.
Imagine like, oh, I just picture myself answering my emails and my feet are kind of like dangling off the side of the boat, and I'm having my morning coffee with the sunlight on my face and like the breeze in my hair. Oh, I love boat life. Like I could be on a boat forever and I'm there answering emails. So that's the kind of vibe that we're going for. And then 2 minutes after, I jump in the ocean and, you know, we go explore some kind of random place like Jack Sparrow style.
Nice. It's gonna be fun. Oh, that's awesome. So you can get like strong enough Wi-Fi out there to hold a Zoom call or something like that. I mean, it's that's incredible.
And we also have Starlink as a backup, obviously, because
A backup. Okay. Sure. So you have like a router on the boat.
We have a few internet options. We have hotspots. So we have routers on the boat. We have Starlink so that we can make sure that, you know, we're covered. It's an important part of what we do is like we take co-working, you know, trips, meaning the co-working situation needs to be spot on.
I know. Do you know this is super productivity nerdy of me, but do you know the Pomodoro method by any chance?
Yeah. Oh my God. Machado swears by it. He lives by that.
It is so, so awesome. So for anybody that doesn't know, it's like, you know, the idea is to work in like sprints and then you have like a little break. So like, you know, I'm going to work in a 50-minute sprint and then take a 10-minute break and you have a timer that clocks that. And so anyway, I'm just imagining I use the Pomodoro method and I'm imagining doing like my 45-minute sprint on emails or writing or whatever. And then like my 15-minute break being like diving off the boat and swimming in the sea and then like getting back to it. I would look forward to my work day. I'd be like, this is going to be amazing. Yeah. I'm going to every 45 minutes, I'm going for a swim in the sea. So that sounds epic.
That's exactly how it's going to look like. Or you just starfish on the boat, sunbathing, or read a book or whatever. Yeah, it's boat life. And then we learn how to sail as well. So that's also really cool. If people have never done it, that way they can learn a little bit about sailing. It's super fun. Oh.
Wow. Oh, man.
It's a workout as well.
Yeah. You're getting some exercise and some vitamin D. I like it. All right. Cool.
Thank you.
I might have to look into that one. I hope About Abroad listeners will as well. Any others coming up?
So after Croatia, we're going back to Iceland. Oh, we love going to Iceland. And then hopefully we'll come back to Japan for a fall trip because Japan is stunning in spring, but also in fall. In fall, the itinerary might be a little bit different because we really want to optimize for, you know, the colors and all the fall festivals that they have. Oh, so we're doing that. And then, my favorite, in the winter, we are going to create our first Remote 9 digital nomad village, probably somewhere in Central or South America. And this is quite a unique concept, and it's going to be our first time doing it. We are going to go to a town. We don't know really where yet. I can't disclose it. I can't disclose where we're thinking about going. But we're going to rent 1, 2, or 3 villas and we're going to co-live there for about 3 months. And we're going to create like a mini village for the Remote 9 community to use as a base from which we can explore Central or South America.
Epic. Oh my God. It sounds so fun. I'm so intrigued by that one.
Thank you. Yes. I can't really say much more at the moment, but I am really looking forward to it because it's going to be the culmination of the community that we've been building over the last 3 years where everyone's going to get together. A lot of people are already like really good friends. So it's like, I imagine this idyllic village where you get to live day by day by day with your best friends, explore together, learn from each other, just support each other. It's this like greenhouse for happiness, basically. And we all get to live in this village together. And it's a pilot concept that we're testing out this year. So I'm super excited.
Incredible. Well, I have high hopes for that one as well. I think I don't think you'll have a problem filling it based on everything you're doing and have shared here today. So yeah, we could talk about this stuff for hours. I know you have to get back to like real work and enjoying Japan, maybe getting some sleep. So thank you for stopping by, sharing everything that you're sharing publicly. I love following all the social handles and everything you're doing. So while we're on that subject, can you mention real quick where people can connect with you, you know, follow along, learn more about upcoming trips, and we'll place all of those handles and links in the show notes as well.
Sure. Thank you. So our website is remote9.com And our Instagram is remote_9. You can find us there. And from there, you can find all of the other bits and pieces, but mostly website and Instagram. Instagram to get to see our raw, authentic vibe. What we're all about. We're a fun bunch.
It's fun to follow along, I can attest. I'm glad that we finally got to meet for the first time, because I have actually been following for a while, and this was a lot of fun. I love everything you're doing, so keep up the awesome work.
Thank you, Chase.
Thank you for sharing, and I hope we get to cross paths on some boat, volcano, or sake house somewhere around the world sometime soon.
I would love to have you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a blast.
You're welcome. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in today from wherever you are in the world. Once again, I'm Chase, and this has been another episode of About Abroad. For those of you wondering how you can best support the show, I have made it super simple for you. Just go over to the show notes of the episode that you just finished listening to and click on one of the two following links. aboutabroad.com/newsletter to get our monthly newsletter, no spam, guaranteed. Or ratethispodcast.com/aboutabroad, where you can quickly and easily leave a review for the show. It's not just important to me, it also helps more wanderers just like you find us. Finally, don't forget to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and we will see you again next week. Thanks again. Hasta luego, amigos.